Good evening and welcome to The Greenhouse. I'm Preston Ball.
And I'm Anna Snow, and we're going to talk about all things planet Earth.
So we got some great things coming up today. First, we're going to be talking about the Grand Canyon being declared a national monument. It's become really political. That's coming up.
And then Why does everything become political? We'll talk about it later.
It's crazy. And then we want to talk about vegan leather today. It's a type of leather. It's not necessarily new, but it was marketed as a sustainable way to make sure you're not killing animals in the process of getting your leather. But it turns out it may have more side effects than you think.
Yes.
But first, there's something that I want to tell you funny that I saw today that has to do with sustainability. It has to do with the ASU bus ads.
Okay.
So as you know, ASU says they're number one in sustainability.
They do.
And they like to, and ASU, if you've ever been on campus, you know how
Like to plaster that everywhere. We're number one in
shuttles.
We're number one in innovation and number one in sustainability, apparently.
Apparently. And now there's, I saw a new ad that said repeated winners of number one in innovation. I'd never seen that before. We're innovation 9 years in a row. Sustainability, I bet somewhere up there too. But
interesting.
Look at that marketing. I just figured it was interesting to note for our audience that this is what ASU is doing.
All right, so let's talk about vegan leather. But before that, let's talk about leather. What is leather? I think most people know what it is, but it is animal skins. Usually you'll think like cows and stuff, but ostriches and seal and lots of other animals can be used. And, you know, you'll see shoes, boots, belts, bags, purses, jackets, my personal favorite, a leather vest. But leather industry as of 2021 has a market value of over $271 billion, which that's a lot. That's crazy.
That's a lot. And I guess I underestimated the places where leather can be used. You talked about everything like that, but like wallets, you know, something simple that a lot of people use. Like maybe not everyone needs boots, but sure, they need belts and shoes. And I think the thing that shocked me was steering wheels.
Yeah, steering wheels, leather seats in your car. Some cars are made with faux leather, but some are made with real, depending on how luxury your car is. Another way that people don't think about it, and this doesn't apply to everyone, but like I do dance shoes. There are no non-leather alternatives. They are leather. And even when I choose to buy canvas ballet shoes, the soles that are you turn on, they're suede, which is usually made of sheep.
Wow. I wonder something is that, you know, leather must have been so cheap to make back in, you know, the old days, because when I think about like quote unquote old stuff, like football leather helmets and leather seats and like cars with like almost a leather covering on top of it.
I don't know if it was cheap, but it was there. They had the resources. Whereas like vegan leather, like we're going to talk about later, is made of plastic. Plastic was not invented until the 1800s. So for most of human history to get that material, it came from animals. And still, it's more common that it comes from animals.
Exactly. And it takes a lot to make said leather. First of all, you got to, an animal has to, you know, lose its life. And once that happens, and the animal's, quote, like, fair game, you strip the skin, and then you got to preserve it. And the way they preserve it is something called tanning. And basically, tanning is very similar to dehydrating the hide of a skin, applying chemicals to prevent, you know, its decomposition. And then that's leather. And then it goes to get processed in places, and it gets turned into products that are very common today.
Yes. And one thing I think a lot of people don't realize about leather is that leather is almost always, it's very commonly, a co-product of the meat industry. So the animals, there are very few companies that raise animals for leather. It's extremely expensive, and there's a lot of waste. So leather companies will usually buy the skin, they'll buy the hide for really cheap from the meat companies, because no one's eating the skin, and no, they're not really killing cows just to make them into leather.
Yeah. I guess, you know, even though animals are being killed, I guess it's positive that it's multi-use in a way, because if you were using certain amount of animals for the skin, certain amount of animals for the meat, you wouldn't be using it efficiently. Yeah. And by that definition, you're doing you're killing more than you need to.
And I think it's interesting, you know, because it is more efficient that way. But I think the companies look at it as a way to make more money. They don't care that they're killing less animals by doing that. They're like, well, as a meat company, they're like, well, I can sell this for a profit that I'm not using. And then the leather companies are like, well, we can just buy this instead of paying to raise our own cows, which is much more expensive.
Yeah. One thing that I wonder about, we talk about, you know, steroids when it comes specifically for meat.
Yes.
I wonder how leather is affected by steroids, because you don't necessarily need to make a bigger animal for more leather,
understanding. I would think that there's no physical, like, I don't think it would change the feel of the leather or the use of it, but I would think it would mean there's more of it, because if the steroids are making the animals bigger, so they produce more meat, so therefore there's more skin. Wow. So, and so a lot of people have heard the term pleather, I guess, especially like in the 80s and stuff, like my parents used to call stuff pleather all the time, which is a word that means plastic leather. And it used to be almost an insult, like, oh, she's just wearing pleather. It's not real leather. She's wearing something cheap. But in recent years, it has now been marked up in price and marketed as vegan leather as an alternative to animal products. But like I briefly mentioned earlier, and like the name implies, it's made of plastic.
Yeah.
It's usually made of polyvinyl chloride, which most people know as PVC, or polyurethane. And both of these materials are made from fossil fuels. And they take hundreds and hundreds of centuries and years to break down. And like I mentioned earlier, that plastic was only invented in the 1800s, and it takes so many years to break down that every single piece of plastic that has ever been made still exists in some form on this planet.
And it's not great that we're making more. The PVC abbreviation rings a bell to me. I had no idea what polyvinyl chloride is, but you know, I've heard of PVC pipes before.
Yes.
So it's, and I know that plastic feel that it has. So seeing that in leather.
Yes. And so PVC is very rigid. So they add what are called phthalates. And you hear those a lot with like shampoos and stuff where they'll say like phthalate free. But it's added to this PVC to make it flexible, to make it wearable, to make a boot that wraps around your toe that curves, to make, you know, a wallet that has a bend in it, you know, a fold. And both of these materials are very bad for the human body and the surrounding environments. And they're actually both banned in several countries. Not the U.S., but several other countries.
Well, it doesn't shock me that the U.S. is behind on, you know, some banning of things.
Yeah. I think we talked about greenwashing here on the show. I think that vegan leather, and I'm not the only one who thinks this, I found this as well doing our research, vegan leather, calling it that, is really just greenwashing, because the plastic impact that it makes, the microplastics that it produces both in the production of making the physical item, and then if you've ever worn something that is this pleather, this fake leather, it peels and it comes off in these tiny little pieces. And those they get all over everything. They're a pain to get off of your other clothes. They look bad on the item as well. And those little pieces get into your system somehow. Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about greenwashing already, but, you know, just to redefine it is the idea that you're doing something is marketed as the good of the environment, but it really isn't.
And it's like, yay, we're not killing any animals. But, I mean,
it's having its long-term effects.
The long-term effects are much worse. The thing about leather that you cannot deny, whether you like wearing it or not, is that it is durable. That stuff lasts. Uh-huh. Because here's the thing. I work at a vintage store, and I shop vintage very often. I have leather boots and vests and stuff that I got at that store or other stores that are from the 70s that are still in fantastic condition and that I'm going to get a lifetime of wear out of.
Yeah. Leather also has this thing with status, I think. You were saying about like pleather and like the connotation it has. But leather, also regular, real leather, has its positive, like, wow, you're, you know, very well off. You have leather seats. So I think that's, you know,
I think vegan leather is trying to do that, but not because it's green and it's better. I think they're trying to do that because companies want to sell it for the prices that they sell real leather, but they're paying much less for it because it's plastic.
Uh-huh. I saw one study that said there were, in 2017, 23 billion square feet of leather were produced each year.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And I wonder in this, like, this ties in with a lot of episodes we've done in the past with like fast fashion. Leather is the complete opposite of that.
It is.
When you say that it lasted, so maybe that's why it's not as popular as it once used to be.
Mm-hmm. I also think that there is something to be said of buying boots, for example, one pair of leather boots that you have for, say, 10 to 20 years because they're that high of quality, versus buying a pair of vegan leather or pleather or fake leather or whatever you want to call it, boots that break down after a year of wear or 2 years of wear that you have to throw away and then replace. So that's more stuff ending up in a landfill versus, you know, the same pair of boots you're going to have a long time. You know, I'm currently wearing Birkenstocks that I bought about 3 years ago in the vegan alternative because I thought that would be better, but they're falling apart. I'm about to buy new ones, and I'm going to buy the real leather ones because the pair I had before this was my mom's pair from the 90s, and they were real Birkenstocks. And I wore those. She had them from the 90s and was wearing them up until she gave them to me. And then they broke on me. A little piece came apart that I couldn't fix. But those were close to 30-year-old shoes when they broke. These ones I've had for 3 years, and they're already falling apart.
Yeah.
The same brand. They're, you know, you'd think they would be at the same quality. But I didn't know this 3 years ago that vegan leather was actually worse. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So it kind of leads, what can you do? And I think Anna kind of hinted at it, is you have to kind of bite the bullet here and buy leather that will last a long time. In the short term, it may not be great because you're killing that animal, but it would be, it's better than the potential risk of microplastics polluting the ocean and making, you know, making their way.
The actual best thing that you can do is to get leather secondhand, because then you're not buying a new product. I mean, the best thing to do when it comes to sustainability as far as fashion is to get stuff secondhand because then you're not getting a new item that, you know, you're saving something from a landfill, essentially. So all of my leather, with the exception of my ballet shoes and the Birkenstocks I'm, like, about to get, are secondhand, and that's how I choose to get it because I like leather products and I know that they last a long time, but I feel better buying them secondhand.
Yeah, because it's been already made and someone
exactly
had use for it.
I'm not giving more money back into the leather industry by buying secondhand. There are a few other alternatives that are not leather and are not made of plastic. I have this link pulled up. There's a few different ones. There's one called Piña Text, which is made from pineapple leaves.
Oh, yes.
And a lot of these are very new and innovative, and they're not super easily accessible on the market. There's specific brands. There's one called Milo, which is made of mushrooms. I'm reading this right now. I don't know who named these.
Interesting names.
Yes,
From the same article, I found a really interesting line that I think sums up not just leather, but I think a lot of the environmental decisions we have to make. Very Socratic seminar of me. What is clear is that every single material on the market today has some sort of trade-off, an impact on the planet, and a mixture of preferred materials is needed going forward. That was a direct quote. But it's saying that not everything is going to be perfect.
Yeah, and this is from a website called goodonyou.eco, by the way. So if you are looking for it, we'll give them the credit.
Yes.
On their article, they also talk about cactus leather, which I actually had heard of prior to doing this episode at all. And I watched this girl on TikTok. We actually quoted her when we did our fast fashion episode. And she is vegan, but she will still buy leather every now and then. And she says, perfection is the enemy of good. If you are trying to be perfect at environmental stuff and sustainability, you're going to fail every single time. Trying to be good and making informed choices is what's actually better, because nobody is perfect. You can never make perfect decisions.
Yeah. That's my favorite quote. It's from Voltaire.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great quote. So that's our vegan leather episode.
Yes.
Coming up next, we're going to be talking here locally about the Grand Canyon. It's been declared a national monument, but some Arizona lawmakers are saying it's a political stunt. So we're going to break down what declaring something a national monument actually means and what it's supposed to do. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Greenhouse. We're back in 1 minute. Welcome back to The Greenhouse on Blaze Radio and blazeradioonline.com. I'm Pratham Ball.
I'm Anna Snow, and we're going to talk about the Grand Canyon and it being a national monument
as
of last month.
Yes, in August. Grand Canyon, very, very touristy.
Yes.
Probably the biggest thing Arizona is known for. Probably
we're the Grand Canyon State. That's our name.
The thing that people told me the most when I decided I was coming to Arizona State was that, oh, you should go check out the Grand Canyon.
As if it's not several hours away.
It's several hours away. You got to really plan for it. So I haven't done it yet, but
I
want
to. I went with my family before I ever moved here. So I have been, but not since living here.
I have been when I was very young. Mm-hmm. So I don't remember. I'd love to check it out again.
Greenhouse field trip.
But the Grand Canyon, all this time, it was simply a tourist spot.
I thought it was a national park.
It was a national park.
Is it not?
It is a national park.
It is, okay.
But it doesn't really come with much protection.
Interesting.
A national park doesn't really have much to it.
Okay.
There are some protections, but mm-hmm. it just got taken a step further.
Okay.
In August, President Biden was here, and he held a photo shoot where he declared the Grand Canyon a national monument. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a big step because the national park, I guess, declaration protects stuff from, like, buildings.
Yes.
Like, developers building stuff around it. But a national monument goes even further. The declaration will protect certain tribal lands and certain resources.
Okay.
We'll talk about those resources in a minute. This is being named, by the way, after an indigenous group, the Bahaj Nawajo Itakukveni Monument. Attempted to use a pronouncer.
The pronouncer looks pretty good.
Apologies if I butchered it. And followed by the Grand Canyon National Monument. It's a big site. It's 1,000 acres, how much is being declared.
Wow. Now,
it's permanent protection is what it has.
So permanent protection, does that mean that, like, a future president couldn't come and be like, never mind?
In theory. Okay. But as we're about to find out, permanent protection is just in air quotes.
Okay.
And we'll see in a little bit. The monument designation, some of the resources it protects, water, wildlife, across several different sites. And then 12 indigenous groups kind of get put together in a cohort to help oversee the protected land, almost like advisors.
Wow. So here in Arizona, the Grand Canyon creates more than $900 million in local boosts, and that includes 10,000 jobs.
So obviously, protecting the Grand Canyon and its, like, infrastructure is much better than just for tourist or, like, you know, natural purposes, like being able to see it. You're getting a lot of help. $900 million is a lot.
I mean, like we were saying, Arizona is the Grand Canyon state. That's the, I mean, I don't know this 100% for certain, but I was going to say that has to be the most visited place as a tourist attraction, but, like, in Arizona.
In strategic communications, we learned that brand is super important, and, like, mm-hmm. public goodwill is super important. And one of the things the Grand Canyon does is it has that public goodwill mm-hmm. of, you know, being so well known and being something positive from the state.
It's such a, like, feat of nature. Like, if you, I know you said you don't remember being there, but it's, like, huge, and, like, looking, even down. Just glancing down into it or stand, you know. And I think it's one of those things that, like, there aren't that many left anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, there certainly are other beautiful natural places, and there's other amazing national parks here in the U.S. But, like, I mean, over the centuries of the country, a lot of them have been built over or even eroded away and things like that.
Exactly. One of the biggest things it protects, in addition to the water, in addition to the good views, in mm-hmm. addition to the money mm-hmm. it protects when the Grand Canyon is able to be used, it's as big in uranium.
Oh.
I didn't know this, but it has the 1.3% of the nation's uranium mining supply. Now, 1.3% isn't a huge mm-hmm. amount, but being in one location, mm-hmm. 1.3% is, you know, a sizable chunk.
Okay.
This declaration will limit new mining claims.
Okay.
Keyword being new.
Yes.
Some mining rights that are, like, existing will not change, according to the Secretary of the Interior.
Mm-hmm.
Private property rights are also being upheld. Mm-hmm. Like, it won't kick people out of this land.
Yeah.
It just prevents things from getting worse, I guess. Okay. But it doesn't necessarily take that solution step that we always look for here on the greenhouse.
Yes.
But here's the thing. Here's a little bit of the backstory.
Okay. I have a question really quick. Yes. But that you might not have the answer to. But again, this is kind of the story you brought to me, so yeah. You know a little more about it. What is uranium, like, used for? Like, why do they need to keep mining it?
I forget the purpose of uranium, but I feel like it's used for a lot of, like, weapons.
Okay.
And stuff like that. I know it's a really radioactive chemical.
Yes. Weapon. Like, I know, like, there's these old vintage, like, dishware that'll be uranium glass that, like, glows under black light.
Oh, wow.
And stuff. Yeah. Like, they used to just serve, here's my little salad I made for the get together in a uranium bowl.
Wow. I know I associate uranium with being dangerous.
I do too. That's why I'm like people collect those items, but I don't think anyone is still serving food out of them.
Yeah. Hopefully. That'd probably be bad for you. So this has been worked on for over a year by multiple senators, and it's pretty – I don't know why surveys like this exist, but they do, and it's mostly unanimous. A good chunk, a majority, support this. 89% of Democrats, 73% of independents, and 65% of Republicans support the designation of a national monument.
So that means even the people who are typically in opposition to President Biden – Republicans, even 65% of them agree that they want the Grand Canyon protected and that this National Monument Declaration is a good thing.
Exactly. And I personally don't know what what the declaration entails in terms of next steps, but the Republican president of the Arizona Senate says it's a waste of taxpayer money, calling it a re-election stunt. So I don't know what it takes to officially be a national monument. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's more so that not all of the things that are being declared was previously a national park, so in essence it's expanding a little and more resources is needed, which is the cost.
Well, but he may think that, but 65%, at least according to the survey, of his constituents who are in his party don't agree with him. He might be saying it very loudly, but it doesn't seem like he has that much backing, like support.
Exactly. And a re-election stunt is another big thing. We're about a year and a half away, year and a quarter. But this is not something new to President Biden or even presidents in general.
Everyone's trying to make themselves look good, especially when you're thinking about that re-election thing. No one wants to have a scandal, especially not right before. No one wants them in general, but especially not before an election.
Exactly. And presidents declare national monuments all the time. Most recently, President Biden created a site to honor Emmett Till.
Okay.
But that was a deviation. Biden has declared 5 monuments in his time as president.
Okay.
4 of them, including the one in the Grand Canyon, have been to protect land. One in Colorado at a place called Camp Hale. That was a former military site.
Okay.
Another place called Aviquame in Nevada, which is actually a former indigenous site for some tribes, including the Mojave. And then Castor Range in El Paso, which is to protect wildlife. So Biden has this history of protecting national monuments and protecting land.
So this isn't a new thing. Seems like a consistent thing that he cares about. And I certainly don't agree with him on every single thing he's done as president. But protecting natural land is something I'm never going to push back against.
Even when he was president, President Trump signed a bill that protected more than 1.3 million acres of federal land. He also wiped some away. About 2 million acres or like restructured in some way. But even it's not a political thing, basically. People have protected land before. And President Obama before him created 26 national monuments.
And that's across his 8 years? Across both his 8 years.
Okay. Not all of them were for land purposes, but that was across his time. The Grand Canyon is really rich, you know, getting to the environmental portion. It has so much wildlife. It has been described as having enough wildlife that takes you from Mexico to Canada. That's how many different kind of species.
That's true. And there are lots of species of animals that only live in the Grand Canyon. They are only found there, many of them very endangered because of people moving in on their land and mining and their environment, their habitat and stuff.
Yeah, and we were talking about this tourism fact earlier. I have a breakdown from the study we quoted earlier about what people do and how the Grand Canyon makes their money. 31% of their money comes from lodging, 27% of the money comes from food and beverages, 12% gas and oil, 10% souvenirs, 10% admissions, 7% local transportation, and 3% camping fees. Now, the big takeaway is these are all people-based activities.
Yes.
You know, they're making their impact on the Grand Canyon. So in that way, humans have introduced non-native plants to the area.
Of course they have.
Air pollution has been seen there. All of these like human-based things. So not only does the National Monument might make it worse because more people want to come see it.
Could be. But then I think what's better, more tourism or more mining? Like,
that's true. It does protect that.
This is probably a situation where you're weighing pros and cons.
Just like we talked about the vegan leather.
Yeah. And that is something we've said time and time again on this show, something we've said, no one is perfect. You can never not make any impact on the environment at all. A lot of this is about weighing pros and cons and deciding what you personally care about and choose to do.
Exactly. Thanks for zipping through this with us today. I'm Pratham Lal.
I'm Anna Snow, and tune in next week for all things Planet Earth.
Have a nice night.